Hi, I'm Nikki from Teaching Autism, and welcome to the Autism and Special Education Community Podcast. Are you an autism or special education professional? Are you a teacher or therapist looking for support and new ideas? You may even be a parent, family member, or carer. This podcast is perfect to help you find out more information, support, and get some of your questions answered. Hi everyone, and welcome back to all our audience who have subscribed to our podcast and tune in every week. We so appreciate you. And if you're new here, welcome. I am so glad to have you here. If you want to stay up to date with new podcast episodes that get released every Tuesday, be sure to hit the subscribe button. Today, I have a guest on our podcast, and we are talking all things IEPs. IEPs can be stressful for everyone involved. Teachers, families, caregivers. But today I'm talking to Brandy Rosen, and she's going to provide you with some tips to make the whole process easier and less stressful for you. Brandy Rosen is a special education consultant and IEP coach who lives in Los Angeles, California. She works with families, helping them to navigate the maze of special education and to support them through the process. Special education can be scary, but you don't have to do it alone. Brandy also provides training for schools and teachers to help them run effective IEPs and to build school and parent relationships that change students' lives. She has been in the field of special education for nearly 25 years, and her unique background and experience makes her an invaluable resource for both families and schools. This interview is full of knowledge, and I can't wait for you to hear all about it. So without further ado, let me introduce you all to Brandy Rosen. Thank you for coming on. First of all, would you like to share a little bit about who you are and what you do with our audience?
Sure. My name's Brandy Rosen. I'm a special education consultant and parent support provider. And what I do is I provide support for families and parents in navigating the world of special education. So I've been in special education both as a public school educator as well as a parent consultant for almost 30 years. And so I kind of have unique experience in being, you know, kind of on both sides of the table, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way. I was a special ed teacher. I was a special education administrator. I've been a staff development internationally and nationally staff development trainer. And throughout it all, I've been providing consultation and advocacy for parents across all areas of special education.
Wow, you have had a lot of experience in a lot of different areas. That is amazing.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Definitely. And I can see how all those things, you know, you are pretty much the full package. You've had actual experience in those things and being in those positions and doing those day-to-day jobs. So I know that you are going to be a wealth of knowledge throughout this interview today.
Thank you.
So after all those experiences you've had, which one would you say was your favorite position to work as?
Gosh, I've loved working in special education. I'll just start off saying that it is and has always been my passion. I can't ever imagine working anywhere else. So starting off there is, you know, a nice place to start. I mean, I think that ultimately I love working with kids, you know, that. So being a special ed teacher was really, really fun and exciting and really good years. So I definitely say that was one of my favorite times. But as I've spent more time in the field and gotten more experience, I think my most rewarding work has been working with families, because ultimately I think that what I'm able to offer for families impacts kids in such a large way that it has been really rewarding. So, you know, that piece of it, I think long term has probably been my favorite piece.
I can imagine, especially being able to offer those families, the caregivers, all that experience and knowledge that you've gained over the years. I can imagine just how helpful and supportive that is for them as well. Because sometimes this world, it can be quite scary for our parents and families to come into.
Absolutely. And I think that that's what I have found over the years is even more than just specific facts and information is that piece that I can offer that they just don't have to go through it alone, because it is so emotional and can be scary and overwhelming. And it's hard to make good decisions and know which direction to go when you have all of that that you're dealing with as well. So
Definitely. And someone with your experience, you know, you've been through all those things, that just brings an extra something to the table, which leads me on to my next question is, I know right now your primary focus is to work both with school and families as well throughout all situations, I suppose. But specifically today, we'll be talking about the IEP process. And I just think it's really nice that you were able to bring families and school staff and any education professional together as well, so that we're all working together.
In my years in special education, I think that one thing that has surprised me and saddened me a little bit is how far apart families and schools have gotten, how litigious it's gotten, and how in the process, I think we've lost track of the student a bit. And that makes me sad, because I think that when you get a team that works together, the impact for children is just so gigantic. So I come from a very strong philosophical place that I believe my role is not to kind of rip that team apart, but to build it back together. You know, I work with families, and there are times when, after listening to what they're looking for, I say, you know, we're probably not a good fit, but I can refer you out to somebody, because they are looking for a little bit more of coming in from a fight place. And I always tell my families, there's always time to fight if it doesn't work out. But this is your family, and you're going to be with them for a long time. So I'm going to do my best to help you build up a good relationship so that, you know, your child gets the best.
Definitely. And I love that mindset that you have as well, where, of course, you know, it may lead to fighting, but first let's try and start things on a common ground and build those relationships. And I know a lot of people used to find it strange how much we wanted to involve our students' parents. We would invite them along for things we had going on in class, because we felt that they were our family as well. You know, it's not just the student. We take on the whole family, and we want them to know that we are there for them and they are there for us as well. Because I think parents can be a support system to teachers as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things we'll probably talk about is new teachers. And I think that though parents can be scary for new teachers because it's just all new, that having a parent that supports you, it makes your job about 100 times easier as opposed to a parent who doesn't support you. So taking the time to build up that relationship is really important.
Definitely. And I think that's something that's maybe missing when we train our new teachers, is how to build those relationships with families and caregivers, and how to keep it positive and professional. I think that's something really important. And it's something when new staff have come to our school, we are really strict on that. You know, we want these positive relationships because it helps the student moving forward.
Absolutely. That's always what it's all about, is coming back to what's best for the student. And that's what we need to focus on.
Definitely. So moving on to today's topic, I am really excited to have you here to talk all things IEPs. And my audience have been blowing up my emails and my social media. We are so excited to have you here. So first of all, I have parents on here, and I have education professionals on here. And sometimes I have a lot of questions where people don't know what an IEP is. And because it's an acronym, sometimes it sounds scarier than what it is. So first, would you just like to share a little bit about what an IEP is and what the benefits are of having an IEP?
Well, an IEP stands for an Individualized Education Plan. And what it is both a support and a document that's provided for by federal law. And what it is it says that a student has a disability as defined by the federal government, and not only has a disability, but requires special education services. So, you know, even going back to the beginning, students are assessed into special education through a formal assessment process. And, you know, it might happen that a child actually does have a disability, but they don't require special education, meaning they're doing fine with the general ed curriculum, and that's good news. But when a child is found eligible for special education, then an IEP, or an Individualized Education Plan, is developed. And really, it just as it says, it's an educational plan specific to that student. It's individualized for each individual student, and it looks at where the deficits are. And this is one of the things I always talk to parents about, because once you kind of hop into the world of special education, it can feel very negative, because special education and IEPs by nature are deficit driven, meaning special educators are looking at what is the student struggling with and how can we help them. So that IEP really defines what those deficits are and then comes up with a plan, the whole team together, on how to move that child forward. It doesn't promise to cure a student of something or even to get them to a certain level, but an IEP by law is required to assure that a child makes meaningful progress. It's different for everybody. That's different for all of us as adults, and that's different for children. And so I think the benefits are just so, so strong. I'm a huge supporter of special education, and I think you'll hear that throughout. But I believe that when a child needs the supports, you know, not just sort of willy-nilly, but when a child truly requires that level of support, special education is wonderful. It provides everything that a child needs. And the other piece of it is that it's free. That's what federal law requires. So if a student's found to need services by the IEP team, then the schools need to provide that. They can't say, oh, you know, your child needs this, but you need to provide it. So once those needs have been determined, then those services are provided by the school system. And so I think the obvious piece is that services come from an IEP, which is what, you know, people kind of think of when they think of special education. But I also think that there's a piece of it that just the level of school level support that comes with special education is another bonus. So it means that there's a whole team outside of the general ed team that's there to support your child, to make sure they're getting what they need, to make sure that they're supported in the way that they need. So to me, it always feels a little bit like a gift, kind of at the end of a road of maybe a tough struggle, because, you know, special education and IEPs are really there to support kids.
Definitely. I think it's really positive for students to have an IEP because, like you've said, it'll tell teachers and parents, families, what the students should be working on, how they can work on those targets and what help they can receive. And I think a lot of people actually don't realize that it's a legal document. Like you said, you know, in the United States is federal law. Here it's bound by our government law as well. And people don't realize that is a legal document that has to be followed for that individual student.
Right. And that's really important because that offers a level of protection for students that, you know, in the past we didn't have. And students really struggled because schools didn't have to follow any particular law. And so though sometimes it can be overwhelming, and especially for teachers, it can feel very overwhelming because there's so much to stay on top of. But ultimately, it protects our kids in a way that nothing else has.
Definitely. And I think although teachers will agree with the fact they can be very overwhelming and time consuming, you know, I've never met a teacher who says it's not worth all those things either. You know, it's no. Definitely worth all that time they put in, all the energy, because we get to see the students progress. You know, we get to grow with our students and watch them through the years as they develop. And it's really nice for us as well, because we treat them like family, and to see them achieve those IEP goals, you know, that's something to celebrate.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, even when you start to see general ed teachers being able to see that progress and understand how, you know, the progress may not look like other kids, but how amazing it is when they do see that, that's really rewarding as well.
Definitely. And like you say, these are individual plans. So they are made individually for every student to suit their individual needs, their abilities, what goals they should be working on for themselves. And I think that's the best thing, because we're not putting everyone into one box. Everyone's having their own box to work on their own things.
Right. It's one of the biggest pieces that differentiates between general ed and special ed. You know, even though teachers differentiate, of course, for general ed teachers, it's not to the same level that it would be individualized for a special education student.
Definitely. Now, I have had a lot of new teachers reach out, and they are wary how early is too early to ask for parent input on IEPs. But do you think there's a sort of recommended time, or what way should teachers ask for that parent input?
I think it's an interesting question, because one of the things that I spend a lot of time working with families, helping them to understand, is that an important piece of the IEP is that it is a school-based program. The purpose of the IEP goals are to assure progress in the school setting. They're not directed at home issues. And so sometimes that can be very confusing for parents, where they'll say to me, but at home they're not doing this, or at home they're acting like this. And so it is hard to explain sometimes that that is absolutely legitimate, and those concerns can be addressed in different ways. But for an IEP, we're really looking at the school impact. And so it is one of the things that oftentimes I will help parents with as a consultant is, this is the school issue, and then this is the outside school issue. So we need to keep those separate. So when teachers are talking to parents, it's important, I think, for them to really help them to understand that. So when they're asking for input, that they want to be really clear that they're asking for input in regards to school. So sometimes that's hard for parents because they're not at school. And oftentimes I'll have parents say, I want the teacher to tell me because I don't know. I'm not there. Or I'm not a specialist. I don't understand. I think the biggest area that teachers can get input is just concerns that parents have. And one of the things that I do, I have a workbook that I work with parents through. And one of the things I really help them to clarify is what those concerns are before they come to the teacher. So for example, oftentimes I'll start working with families who have struggled a little bit with developing relationships with schools. And so I'll ask them, okay, well, what happened? Tell me about the conversation. And what I hear is their anxiety comes out in a way that I know, as being both, you know, a parent as a teacher, that teacher's hearing that they're being attacked a little bit or that they're not doing something they should be doing. And when I ask the parent to clarify, they just have a true concern, but the way that they're saying it comes off in a different way. So I think that the more, again, that teachers build relationships with parents from the very beginning, before things get hard or before they're even asking about ideas for goals or IEPs, the better off that communication will go. So I think that, I mean, I'm a big fan of communication logs so that communication is open throughout, you know, not just when we're coming up to an annual IEP. And I encourage my parents to ask for things like that, but at the same time, to be very thoughtful of how much time a special ed teacher has. So I think really balancing that piece out is important when asking for information from parents. As far as an IEP, you know, I believe that that's the first get-go in the IEP is really asking for parent concerns and questions at the very beginning of the meeting. And as an educator, what I always did was I had a piece of paper next to me and I would ask for parent question and concerns. And then I would make that list on a piece of paper. And then I would say, you know, okay, we're going to address these as we go, but please feel free to add at any point during the meeting. And then at the end of the IEP, I would go through that list again and really make sure that all of those questions and concerns were touched on so that a parent, just to make sure that we covered all those areas that the parent was concerned. Because, you know, sometimes you get kind of lost in the meeting and you're not sure you cover everything. So I think kind of both of those pieces go hand in hand.
Wow, that was a great answer. I know she is going to be so happy with all those things. And it was really interesting what you touched on, because we've touched on this a few times in previous podcasts where parents and families and caregivers, they may see different behaviors than what school is seeing. So it's really interesting that you brought that up as well from an IEP point of view, where parents may be expecting to see one thing and school is seeing another thing.
Right. And I explain to parents, even though we know this as parents, but that would be expected. It's not unusual that you would see different things at home and school. And, you know, we have that conversation all the time where maybe the school doesn't see any behaviors and the family does. Well, the school is more structured and that's the way it should be because, you know, a home is not supposed to be a school. And so that's okay to be able to see those differences and to be able to talk about that and maybe, you know, it helps us to know, okay, they're not showing these behaviors in this setting. Maybe if I add a little bit more of this, then we'll have better results with those behaviors as well, or things like that.
Definitely. And it opens up again, like you say, building that relationship with school and home and seeing what supports we can provide them as well. Because like you say, it could be something in the environment. It can even just be that the child is more comfortable at home. That's their safe space. And that's where their behaviors are unfortunately going to come out, which can be really upsetting for families, but it's definitely probably more than likely not anything that they are doing. It's just where the child feels safest.
Right. And I just had this conversation with a parent yesterday and we were just laughing about it. I said, as frustrating as it is, it's good news. It means they can hold it together during school and that they feel safe with you. It's just now, you know, from a different standpoint, we're going to work on how to provide some things so that they can deal with that better in the home. But that's good news. It means that they do have the ability because they're able to do it for 6 or 7 hours a day. So
definitely. And I already love this service that you are providing to families, but also alongside working with schools as well. It sounds fantastic what you do and just the knowledge and experience and support you can provide as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
So moving forward, what we were just discussing about those IEP goals, I have a lot of my audience reach out and they ask, what are the best ways to set IEP goals? Especially when a lot of our teachers now, it falls on them to set their own IEP goals and come up with them. What would you say those best ways are?
Yes, I've done a lot of training in this for teachers as well, because it is probably one of the most overwhelming pieces of being a special ed teacher. And I can say probably one word over and over, which will help them, and that's data, data, data. I think that most of us are naturally kind of afraid of data because it seems big. But once you get a system in place that allows you to collect data on the deficits, then it just makes your life so much easier. The idea of an IEP, I look at it, and I think because I'm a visual learner, I look at it as a connect the dots process. And what I mean by that is that there's a very meaningful order to IEPs. And if we stick to that, it really helps us in developing goals. So present levels guide goals and goals guide services. And there's a meaning behind that order because one feeds into the next. So if you're collecting good data and if you have a good idea of where they're presently performing, then you're able to develop goals based on their individual needs. I think sometimes we get overwhelmed with how many areas we might need to write goals because, you know, a lot of our kids come with a lot of different areas of need. But I think that once you start breaking them down really systematically, then you have a much easier time. I often will tell new teachers, you don't want cookie cutter goals, meaning we don't want to say this is our reading goal and this is our math goal and this is our behavior goal, but you don't also have to reinvent the wheel every time. So if you have a goal that you really like in the area of, say, reading comprehension, then you can use that as your base for many different students. Now, it won't look exactly the same because kids are different and it should be, you know, on their own baseline. But that doesn't mean you can't use that. I mean, all good educators use what works. General ed teachers, special ed teachers, we use curriculum that works. We reuse it, but we switch it for the group that we have. So I think it's really important to look at all the areas of deficit and to be able to write the goals in a meaningful way. Another piece to think about when you're writing goals is that we want to make sure that it's a reasonable goal. So it doesn't mean that the law does not require that every goal is met at the end of each year, but we want to make sure that it's meaningful. So for example, if you're writing a goal for a student to attend, maybe to pay attention, and right now, because you've taken really great data, they're able to attend for say a minute without getting distracted, then you're probably not going to want to write a goal for a year that they'll attend for 15 minutes. Because that's just too big a jump. Nobody can make that jump. So you really want to be thoughtful in the student that you have, the kind of growth that you've seen. And then the other piece for here in the States anyway, is to really look at the standards and to be able to connect the goal to the standards. Now that doesn't mean that we're writing a goal for a grade level standard if the student is not near that. What it does mean is that we're looking at what the standard is asking. And then we want to write a goal that is scaffolded or broken down from that leveled goal. So for example, again, I'll use reading comprehension. If the goal is that a student will read a passage and be able to ask who, what, when, where, and how questions, then you might have a student who's only at the level where they can listen to a story and answer a what question. And that's okay, because that's where they're performing. So that's really the key for writing goals, is just to make sure we know exactly where they are. And then we have really good data to support that, because coming from a parent support, I can tell you that almost always we walk into an IEP and a teacher has really good data and reasons for why they want to write goals or don't want to write goals. Parents feel good about that. They understand that. They want to know, oh, okay, so that's why we're going to start here, or that's why we're going to do that. And that really helps build that relationship with families.
That was fantastic advice. And I think that data can do so many things for us. It can help in so many ways, but also showing up with all that data as well, that just provides the families with a little bit more information about how their child is doing in class, what things they can be working on. So it just gives them a little bit of insight into school life as well, because I know that a lot of our families feel like maybe they're missing out on their child's progress and their child's learning because they're not at school with them. And that's quite scary for a parent to just, you know, let that go, especially when many of our students are nonverbal and they can't tell their parents, you know, today, mum, I wrote my name. They can't, you know, they may not be able to go home and say that, but to take all that data in and say, you know, he progressed from writing his first name to his first name, his middle name, now his first name, middle name, last name, little things like that, I think really help sort of solidify the relationship as well.
I totally agree with that. I think that's really important. And I think that if we, you know, as educators, remember that we're experts in our field. And just as if you walked into the doctor and they were telling you, you know, giving you a prognosis or telling you something that maybe was wrong, you would want the data. You wouldn't want them to say, well, you know, we think it's probably this because we just have a feeling about it. You would want to know these tests were done. This was the results, and this is why we're recommending what we're recommending. And so, you know, we as educators should be providing that same level of information. And as parents, that's really meaningful.
Definitely. And on this sort of subject of talking about data, we do often hear a lot about accommodations and interventions and modifications with IEPs. Now, that can be really overwhelming for our families, especially when you're sat in maybe your first ever IEP meeting for your child. You know, hearing all those things can be quite overwhelming. And I find that a lot of our families actually shut down. So we spend a little bit of time talking through what they mean. So do you think you could share a little bit with our listeners about the differences between accommodations, interventions, and modifications?
Sure. And I agree with you. I think that so many times as special ed teams, as IEP teams, people forget that parents aren't in the same place that they are. And so they just start in. And I often will tell parents, because I truly believe this in my heart, they're not trying to rush through because they want to get out or they're doing anything. It's because they're ready to start. They know what they want to do. They have their plan. They're excited. They're ready to go. So it is from a level of confidence that I think people move through so quickly, but it's so critical that families are along for the ride. So, I mean, even at the very beginning, being able to say, okay, this is what's going to happen at the IEP. Let me explain to you why. Let me explain why I'm going to talk about services at the end and not at the beginning. And just to be able to explain that, it really helps put parents at ease, because there are different pieces to the IEP and they're all really critical. And again, they all sort of build off of each other. So the goals are based on the deficits. And then accommodations are things that are put in place to help a student while they are learning the skill deficit that they have. So an accommodation is something that helps the student and is given by the adult. And so one of the ways that I explain that to parents is the goal is what the student is going to work on. The accommodation is what we are going to do to help that student along the way. And so there's so many options. I mean, it really is anything that'll help a student. And we look at those accommodations in multiple different areas. So we look at, you know, how we can help through academics, how we can help through social, how we can help with behavior, communication, all of those areas. Ultimately, the goal is that we're able to fade some of those accommodations back, but we put those in place to be able to help children succeed in meeting their goals, basically. And then there's also, along with that, there's something called modifications. And modifications are put in place when a team determines that a student is not expected to meet the grade level standard. So let's say that you have a student who has a disability in math and is maybe 4 grade levels below in math. And the team's recommending they use a different curriculum to be able to work on some of those basic skills. Then they may recommend a modification in math, meaning we're going to keep working on these skills, but at this point, we don't think they're going to be able to meet the standard, so we're going to work on an alternative program. So that's kind of accommodations versus modifications in a very small nutshell. And then the services are what we provide to help implement the goals and help the kids receive a free and appropriate public education. So there's different providers that provide different levels of support. And that, again, is based on student need. I always encourage educators and parents to be very careful of the disability track, where they say, well, if they have this eligibility, then they get this service. Or if they have this eligibility, then they get this much service. It's not based on an eligibility area. It's based on student needs. So that should be individualized. And the way that a team should work is, you know, you go through the present levels, you develop the goals together, you look at accommodations and modifications, and then each specialist or expert is going to recommend what services they think they require to be able to meet the goals that have been set by the team. So it, again, no student with special needs is the same, and no IEP should look exactly the same as well.
That was a great explanation. And I know that will put so many parents, families, caregivers at ease, because those words can be really frightening when you first go into an IEP. And like you say, us as teachers, sometimes we can be guilty where we know what everything is and we just assume the families do. So we whiz through it because we want to get through it. We want to get to the, you know, really positive bits. We want to tell them what's working great. So sometimes maybe we forget to sort of go over what we are going to be discussing and what different things mean. And we just assume wrongly, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that would have been helpful for, as I say, the families, but it would also have been really helpful for first-year teachers. Now, what would be your top three tips for a first-year teacher in dealing with IEPs?
I think that there's so, the first year of being a special ed teacher can be so overwhelming. So I think that, first off, the organization. There is just so much to organize because you're in charge of scheduling IEPs and knowing when everything is due. And you probably have different grade levels and different content areas. And there's so much to keep track of that I think putting a little bit of extra time in at the beginning to get your organization systems in place pays off in the end. There's no question that you're going to be tired, you're going to be overwhelmed, you're going to miss things. And all of that's okay, because that's what being a first-year teacher is. And I think, you know, kind of an overarching tip for first-year teachers is to take a breath. Give yourself a break. Know that it's not going to be perfect. There's people that have been doing this a long time and they still make mistakes, and that's okay too. So I think organize, really have an organization system for all your IEPs and your goals and your data collection, and make that a priority to get done right away. It'll make your life so much easier. And then I would say building relationships, both with the school team and with parents. That's really critical. Special ed teachers have kind of a special, unique place in a school because they often work with so many different people. They have to be really flexible and a little bit like cruise directors, where they're able to work with all different types of personalities and people coming at them with all different requests and demands and styles of doing that. So really just taking the time to build that relationship. One of the funny things I think is that because we're so busy as special ed teachers, oftentimes the special ed teacher doesn't ever end up going into like the teacher lounge for lunch. And I really think that is a mistake, because that is really where the heart and soul of the school is. And that's where you build those relationships. So I encourage all the new teachers that I train really to take the time. I know that it seems overwhelming and you don't have a minute, but to take the 5-10 minutes to go down there, be able to hang out, talk, build up those relationships, and really, really important, ask questions. You know, you're walking into a family in a new school, and it's really important to ask questions. How are things done? What's worked in the past? What hasn't worked in the past? All those pieces of information are going to help you, you know, be successful. So I think that's really, really important. And then I think building the relationship with kids and families. Oftentimes, as new special ed teachers, we jump in and we want to just, you know, hit the ground running. But it's okay to take a little bit of time to meet the parents, to meet the kids, to understand, you know, where these kids are coming from, to let the kids have a little time to build rapport with you as well, and to take that time. And one funny thing that I remember so clearly working as a very young teacher was that oftentimes a lot of our new teachers are very young, and it's hard for them to be able to talk to parents from a place of an expert, because they feel like, you know, they're so young and what could they possibly know? And I think that really coming from a place of being a partner with a parent as opposed to telling them what to do really earns you a lot of credibility and a lot of trust and really helps you move forward. So I think that, you know, oftentimes people are asked this question and you'll hear a lot of things like learn the curriculum and do, you know, a lot of kind of teacher things, which absolutely is important. But I really do believe as a special ed teacher, the relationship building is really critical for us and that organization.
Definitely. Those were great tips and so helpful for so many teachers as well, not even just new teachers. And I definitely agree where young teachers now, it can be really frightening to go in there and open yourself up and, you know, have someone trust that you know what you're talking about. That can be quite scary, especially if it's your first experience doing it. But I always sort of say that the best professional development you can get from the teacher next door. So yeah, don't be afraid that, you know, ask for help and see what advice they can give you. Even if you want them to sit in with you on the first IEP meeting, as long as that's okay with families, you know, just to give you that confidence and help you stay on track and just for someone to sort of believe in you and help steer you as well.
That's great. I love that. The best advice is from the teacher next door. That's a great way to think about it.
Sure. And I think it's so frightening as a first year teacher, especially when you look around and everyone else seems to have it together. They're doing all the things and you're swimming and trying to keep your head above water. But it's just experience and those years of building that as well.
Right. Absolutely.
Now, I know you mentioned organization, and this is huge with IEPs. You have to be organized with them or things can quickly turn into a hot mess. Yeah. So what are some tips that you have for teachers to stay organized with their IEP data and the information?
What I usually tell teachers is you need to find what fits best for you. And I jokingly say it's like finding the perfect pair of jeans. There is no one perfect pair for everybody, and there's no one perfect organization system for everyone. And so it is a little bit of trial and error. But again, I think your advice of the teacher next door is wonderful. Ask other people, ask other teachers, what works for you? Can I see your systems? When I was overseeing a special ed program, I always had my new teachers go observe in more experienced teachers' classrooms. And they would ask them, show me how you keep track of your IEPs. Can I borrow your data sheet? All of that so that you can get what works. I think the best thing to do as a new teacher is to pick one way and go with it for the year and give it a try and see if it works. As you have a little more experience, then you can make changes. But pick one way that works for you, whether that's file folders with everything, whether that's notebooks, whether that's, you know, using the whiteboard to organize things. It's very different for everybody. I personally liked file folders and I kept each child's information in one. And then I was able to always go back to that. Other people like folders, other people like all online or in a, you know, Google Drive. I still like paper. I still like to hold it in my hand. It helps me. But I think what's really important is you pick a way, you commit to it, and you stick with it long enough to make sure whether it works or doesn't work for you.
Definitely. And I think, like you say, it is a lot of trial and error and nobody expects you to get it perfect that first year. But just trying things, seeing what works for you. And I can say, going back to where you mentioned going into the staff room and building relationships with other teachers, it could be a teacher who is 4 grade levels higher than you, but they have the organization system that fits your personality and that would work really well for you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, sticking on the sort of topic of organization, what would you suggest for teachers to take into IEP meetings with them to be prepared and organized and have everything on show for parents?
I think that the way that I think that an IEP runs best is when you have copies for the family of the old goals, the new goals, the accommodations so that they can follow along and really nicely stapled so that it's all organized. That's a big thing. I also, on a personal level, across the country, the IEP systems are now computerized. And so I encourage my new teachers to print out the IEP and not try and follow it on the computer, because it's just one more step that they have to do when they're trying to run the meeting, which can, you know, be a lot to take care of. And so I encourage it on a piece of paper so that you can just run through it in the order that it's meant to be, you know, run through. And then also then having all the data that's relevant summarized with you, not just packets of work, because that takes a very long time then to go through it, but just a summary of whatever data you use just on a piece of paper. So then when a parent says, well, how often are they doing it, or how much can they do it, or when are they doing it, that you're able to just look at that piece of paper. So the more you have in front of you, the less you struggle, and the more confident you come off, and really the more parents have buy-in and feel like you're really doing what needs to be done for the student. And so that's really important. I do also really like the use of an agenda for both yourself and for the rest of the team that just goes through the order of the IEP so that people know. And it's also helpful if people are getting off track a bit to be able to bring people back to the agenda, saying, okay, so let's, you know, check on back in and look at, we were on number three, let's go on to number four. We want to make sure we get through it, things like that. So everybody has sort of that visual structure in place to be able to stay on task.
Definitely. I love the agenda idea, because we are all probably guilty of, you know, running an IEP session and we come to a certain goal or target and we discuss what we think is going well with that. The parents may offer input, but then, you know, we may offer another input, and then all of a sudden things start going way off track. So having that agenda to sort of bring us all back to where we are, I think that's really helpful for both sides of the party as well.
I agree.
And regarding that agenda, do you have a particular order that an IEP meeting runs successfully with? Like, what sort of things to start with and finish on?
Yes, actually, interesting. Federal law actually speaks to this a bit, and so it allows the order to be pretty clear. The idea that, again, that I come back to the connect the dots, that everything leads into the other, is that, you know, I think the most complete and organized way to run an IEP is, first, you give parent a copy of their parent rights, because that's part of what we need to do. Do introductions, you talk, you know, ask for parent concerns, and then you move into present levels, which then leads you to goals, which then leads you to accommodations, and then leads you to services. And so if you're really following that, and I will tell you that for new teachers that I've trained, I actually put that visual down on a piece of paper with the dots connecting, so that they remember kind of what order it goes in and why it goes in that order. And if you stick to that order, it makes it really easy to run the IEP. It becomes a little more tricky when you get out of order. So sometimes, you know, somebody will like start talking about services, and then everybody gets confused because you were talking about goals, but now are we talking about services, and who are, you know, it gets very confusing. So if you just keep everybody on the order, then the IEP is very smooth. And it really, really does help parents to understand, once you get to services, why those services are what they are.
Definitely. And having that agenda that you can stick to as well, it just keeps everyone on task. So we're not going off talking about different things. And like you say, it helps to avoid that confusion. And sometimes confusion can lead to stressful situations. So we want to try and avoid those things.
Absolutely.
Now, regarding the data that you mentioned, you know, bringing that data along to IEPs, one of the most common questions I get are, teachers don't know what the best way to collect data is, especially when they're trying to track progress for every individual child in an organized and consistent way. So do you have any sort of advice or tips for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the simple answer to that is you put it in your schedule. And so data doesn't need to be constant, and really data shouldn't be constant because it's less meaningful. And so I always put it in for once a month to be able to collect data. And so I made it data day. And that meant that all the goals were in place and we were collecting data on all the goals once a month. So then by the time you're coming up to your annual IEP, you have, you know, 11-ish months of data. And it's all right there, and it's on your lovely data sheet that you've created based on what works for you. And I do that as part of my service time. So if they were coming in for different services, part of that time would be data collection. And so that makes it really simple. You're not trying to squeeze it in and forget and remember to do it. If it's on your calendar as part of your lesson plans for, you know, the first Monday of every month, then that's the day you collect data. And then when it's time to write your IEPs, your time is cut in half because you already have all that information.
Definitely. And I think it all ties in at the end of the day to just finding a system where you can stay organized. And that is really the secret to most things with staying on top of IEPs.
Absolutely.
So one question that I do have is, a teacher really wants to involve her students more in IEP meetings, but she doesn't want to put too much pressure on the students. And obviously her students have different ability levels, so it's not always where they could come into an IEP meeting and answer questions. So what sort of advice would you give her to be able to involve her students more in that process?
It's an interesting question. I have mixed feelings, I'll be honest about this. Because an IEP is so deficit driven, I think that for younger kids, I don't really think that they should spend much time in the IEP, because I don't think that it's really appropriate for them to hear all the things that you're going to be talking about. And if the child's there, the team does not feel as comfortable really kind of getting into the nitty gritty of what needs to be talked about. Now, when they're older, I think absolutely. Once they're 16 and they need to be a part of their IEP, and most places they do include the children in the IEPs. But sometimes when a family or an IEP team want to have some more involvement for the students in the IEP, they will come in at the beginning of an IEP and they might be able to share like what's working for them, what's not working for them, what they'd like to improve in, and be able to share all of that. And then the team can document all of that and then be able to move forward with that at the end. And then afterwards, the teacher or the family can discuss kind of how they're going to meet those needs of the student as they requested it. Another thing that some teachers will do is they'll sit down with the child before the IEP and they'll talk about goals. And they'll say, what do you think you need to work on? Where, you know, I'm developing your goals. What do you think you need improvement in? Where do you want help? What helps you? You know, looking at the accommodations, getting feedback from them, certainly as they get older, about what is helpful to them and what isn't helpful to them. And certainly as they get older, you know, kids are really, they're very insightful, where, you know, they may no longer want an adult to be telling them what they should do in the classroom or walking with them between different places. And so they're able to share that. They're ready to make that level of independence their own. So I think those are some ways to bring the student into the IEP without having them sit there and just kind of hear all of that. I mean, as adults, we understand that we're talking about those things from a place of helping them. But I think as a child, if you start to hear all of that, it can be a little overwhelming.
Definitely. That was very helpful. And I think whereas sometimes teachers can overestimate how much a child understands, I think sometimes we can underestimate as well. And, you know, I've seen a few times where if you're maybe talking about a child, they can actually shut down because they don't want to hear about themselves, or they don't want to hear the negative things. They don't want to be a part of that situation. And I know for us in particular, this wasn't for our IEP meetings, but this is for our annual reviews that we used to do. Well, we used to have a little sheet. It was just a worksheet. And we would put it on the interactive whiteboard, because a lot of my students, you know, they're not great yet at handwriting, their fine motor skills. So it was more easy for them. And we would work on, they would write their name, they could choose a photo of themselves or draw a picture of themselves, and they circled what subjects they liked to do and what subjects they felt they were good at. And I think maybe that takes the pressure off as well, because it wasn't asking them questions and discussing really all those goals, but it was in a sort of roundabout, adapted way for them.
Right, that's great.
So I know that sometimes in IEP meetings, disagreements can happen. And we're all human, disagreements are always going to happen. But what do you think the best ways are for both teachers, education professionals, and parents and families as well to sort of handle disagreements in a professional and understanding way?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think there's, you know, a couple things that really help families and schools work through that situation. And the first one, and which probably is the most important and could almost be a standalone, would be just to be aware of your own emotions and how they impact your communication. I think that we forget how much what we're feeling inside is impacting the way that we're talking and speaking to others and interacting in a group. And so it's probably one of my top supports that I provide families in IEP meetings, is that ability to be able to identify for them that maybe the what they're saying and the way they're saying it is coming out a certain way because of the way that they're feeling, and that maybe we can step back and look at it differently. At the same time, being able to talk to schools and say, I think what they're feeling is overwhelmed because they don't understand what you're saying, or they hear a lot of negativity. Can we talk about this a little bit differently? And then I think teachers will often become defensive and get intimidated by parents because of the way that everybody's talking. And then everybody's kind of you know, they're in their own space emotionally, and that impacts the way that they're communicating. And so many times the disagreements are based about that. And that's really a critical piece. I think another thing is really being willing and available to listen to others' opinions and thoughts without immediately jumping to a conclusion. So again, working with families on that idea that the more they can be open to listening to what the teachers have to say, the more they might hear something that they do agree with or understand where the teacher's coming from or look at it from a different perspective. So really kind of that openness and that really true ability to listen without already kind of thinking what their next comment is going to be. And then the same thing for teachers, to be able to listen to parents and understand, you know, they may not be saying things in a way that the teacher wants to hear, but to almost be able to listen past that. And again, being a new teacher, this is very hard. But as you have some experience under your belt, to be able to say, I understand they're coming from a place of fear. They're scared. They're scared for their child. So I'm going to try and listen a little deeper than that and hear what they're really concerned about. And then along those lines, really asking questions. So as a parent, maybe saying, you know, they're hearing that the school's recommending something that they don't agree with, as opposed to immediately being like, I don't agree and I'm not agreeing to that, to be able to say, well, explain to me more. Tell me why. Why do you think that's the best place? Why do you think that's going to help them? Where are we going with that? What's our plan with that? You know, and then for the school to be able to answer that as well, to be able to say, that's a great question. Let me explain to you why I think that's really important and who I see your child is and where they could go. So really listening, asking those questions and understanding. And then ultimately, this is a biggie, to be able to agree to disagree. There are times where we won't all agree and we won't get to the same place. It doesn't mean that we need to get nasty. It doesn't mean that it needs to be a fight. It might mean that we just need to sort of table this right now. We're not going to agree on this. And then we can come back to it and we can try again. I think IEP meetings are almost exactly like a family dynamic or a relationship dynamic. And everything that you know to do in your relationships is the same exact thing that you need to do in an IEP. Just really be thoughtful about the way that you communicate.
Definitely. And I think sometimes nerves can come into play as well with the way that we sort of word things and react to things, especially maybe families who are going through this experience for the first time. And like you say, they're scared, they're frightened for their child and what to expect. They don't know what their child is going to be doing in a year from now, 5 years from now, and all that fear can bottle up. And then on the flip side with teachers, if this is your first IEP meeting, you are already panicking about probably all the things. And then when a disagreement happens, you're panicking even more, you're taking things personal. And like you say, it's just about appreciating each other and taking the time to listen to each other. And like you say, agree to disagree. I appreciate what you're saying, but right now let's maybe focus on this first and then we can get to that. And you know, it's just about agreeing to listen and be their support system for them.
Absolutely.
Now, I have two more questions. So one is, some of this teacher students have IEPs. They are in general education classrooms, but they come to her for services. How does she best communicate the importance of the IEP to the general education teacher and to encourage that communication to track progress?
I think that some of the things that are really helpful are communication logs between special ed teachers and general ed teachers so that everybody knows what everybody's doing, to be able to really communicate what's happening in the general ed class and what's happening in the special ed class. So keeping those lines open. I also think that, you know, just the more availability and relationship building that you develop, the better off you're going to be. I think that we also forget that general ed teachers are not special ed teachers, so that is not their area of expertise. And oftentimes I work with general ed teachers and they say, I just don't know what to do. Like it's not that I'm resistant, I just don't understand this. And so really being able to walk those teachers through, give them just the information that they need, not everything, but just the information they need. So if they only need to know what the goals are and the accommodations, just that information. You know, print it up on a separate piece of paper and then make yourself available to really help them. And then the other piece that I think is really critical with that is for us as special ed teachers to have empathy and to really understand what general ed teachers are going through. And so I think sometimes we can lose patience with that, but that the idea that they've got 30 some odd kids and what we know makes sense for this student might just be overwhelming for this teacher. And so really meeting them where they are and saying like, okay, almost what are you willing to do? What can you do? How can I help you make this happen? And that's, you know, that's our job as special ed teachers, and it can be really rewarding that way as well.
Definitely. And I think for general education teachers, it can sometimes feel like they're a fish out of water and someone's talking a totally different language to them. And I really like that you say, just tell them what they need to know. And then that will really help them communicate those things with you and understand the IEP process.
Absolutely.
So our final question is, for a parent who is attending their first IEP meeting, what is the best piece of advice that you could offer them?
Great question. I think the best piece of advice is to go in with as much knowledge as you can, but also be really available to listen and keep yourself open to what the team has to say. Don't go in with any preconceived ideas or thoughts of how things are going to go, but just go in and be ready and willing to listen to what the experts have to say, and then you can go from there. This is not the last chance you ever have. This is the first chance. And so it's okay to just go in and listen and to ask questions and to figure out what's going on in the system. You're not expected to be an expert yet. That's not, you haven't even started the process yet. And so I think going in, knowing that you're not going to know everything, being prepared to have some emotional reaction to what's going to happen, and then being confident in sharing what's going on with you and what you're thinking and what you're feeling, as opposed to going in, you know, thinking you're going to be fine and it's not going to have any impact on you, and then really having an experience that you weren't expecting. But I encourage my families every single time to go into the meeting expecting everything is going to go amazing. That's where we start. We expect that this team is going to, you know, provide the services, that our child is going to be great, and that everything's going to go the way that we want. And then from there, if it doesn't, then we can move forward. But always head in with that expectation that this is your team. They're there to support you. And they're doing this because they love kids. And so they're there for you. So I think not expecting too much of yourself going in. You know, sometimes I work with families and they've done, you know, 100 hours of research and they have all this laid out and they have everything in front of them. And then I say to them, why don't you just leave that at home for today? Let's just go in and experience it. And listen and hear what they have to say. And so I think that really helps parents to just take a breath and go in and experience it and, you know, be there for the whole thing.
That is perfect advice. And I know it will be so comforting for so many of my parents who are going into maybe not even just their first IEP meeting, but any IEP meeting. Thank you so much for coming on today, Brandy. I know my audience are going to be so excited to listen to this and how much experience and knowledge you've shared with us. Where can my audience find you?
Thank you. By the way, it was a pleasure and really fun to have this conversation. My website is brandyrosenconsulting.com. And so you can reach me there. And really all of my contact kind of goes through that site. That's probably the easiest way to get in touch with me. My phone number is 818-857-7359. And my email is brandyrosenconsulting@gmail.com.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Brandy. I will put all those in the show notes as well to make my audience just find it a little bit easier to find you. And I really appreciate you coming on today and talking all things IEPs and letting me have so much of your time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to my Teaching Autism and Special Education Community podcast. It was wonderful to have Brandy as a guest on the show today, sharing her knowledge and experience with all things IEPs. I hope you've been able to take away some valuable knowledge and experience that you can put into practice in your classroom or with your family when you have your next IEP meeting for your child. All of the information and links that Brandy has shared to contact her can be found in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you soon.